have connections in the government.
Yes, you.
U.S.
Welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. We take life's most difficult questions, concerns, and challenges and turn them into manageable nuggets of information so that you can make the best decisions when you are planning for tomorrow. You can contact us at pftradio@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Planning for Tomorrow Radio, or if you're calling from the local listening area, 304-399-8255, or long distance, 877-420-8255. Well, good morning and welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. Fred Kitchen along with you, and hope you're having a great day. Want to take a few minutes here and tell you just a little bit about a few things that we still have available that has been incredible, the response from people that are needing these items. We still have, I want to make you aware that we still have the Five Wishes document made available. That's, you can pick that up at Henson Mortuary, at the Resource Center there at Henson Mortuary. The Five Wishes document is the living will and the medical power of attorney. And it actually goes, as we've talked about on the show in the past, it goes a couple steps farther as far as your personal wishes and things like that for end of life. But also want to make mention that we had Jody Clock on the show some time back, and she was the author of a book, Navigating the Elder Care Journey Without Going Broke. And that's one of the things that it seems like a lot of families are faced with parents and grandparents and things like that. We're trying to figure out this whole elder care thing. You know, what do we do to protect our assets? How do we do this that's going to be best for our family? And so there is a book by Jody Clock. If you are interested in having that book I believe is, yes, it's $15. That is made available also at the Resource Center at Henson Mortuary, so if you'd like to have a copy of that, it's a great book from start to finish on how to deal with nursing homes, how to deal with Medicare, Medicaid, all those type of things. So it's definitely something you want to grab a hold of. And also, the radio show that we did with Jody is available on CD at the Resource Center at Henson Mortuary. Also, that is free of charge if you'd like to have a copy of that. And, of course, all of our podcasts, the previous shows, are available on our website at pftradio.com. So without further ado, I want to talk a little bit today about, we've talking about the elder care, the navigating the elder care journey. And in the studio with us, we have a guest with us that's going to talk a little bit about his personal experience of neighbor-to-neighbor elder care. Now, when we're talking about neighbor-to-neighbor elder care, we're talking about all of us that are basically, we have a neighbor next to us, live next to us, or maybe in our neighborhood, or maybe someone that we're friends with, someone we go to church with, whatever that connection is. And we're not professional caregivers, but we want to kind of jump in there and help these people that are in a situation. So today we have in the studio with us, we have Larry Crawford. Larry, glad to have you with us.
Fred, it's great to be with you this morning. It's a real honor and a privilege.
Oh, it's an honor to have you with us. And tell us just a little bit about yourself, Larry. Give us a little history of who you are and where you come from and all those good things.
Well, Fred, I'm a West Virginia boy.
We like that.
I was born in Mercer County and moved up here when I was 7 years old and been in Cabell County ever since, with the exception of my period of time in the military. And so Cabell County Schools was my school system, and Marshall University was my school system, which I really enjoyed that. So
you can't go wrong with being a West Virginia boy and having Marshall University as part of your life, woven into the fabric of who you are, and especially when we're broadcasting from downtown Huntington, West Virginia. That's a great... That's a great alma mater to be from.
Oh, yes, it is.
Tell us a little bit about when you and I talked. Of course, you know this show is based with talking about a lot of end-of-life issues, but the neighbor-to-neighbor elder care really intrigues me a little bit, and it's something that, you know, really when you think about it, we give it a title there that sounds maybe a little more than what it really is, but it's really pretty simple what we're doing in that situation. But you had a journey that you were placed, that you were involved in. And I appreciate you sharing that with our listeners today. But let's talk a little bit about that, how that began for you and where that, how that developed.
Okay. After getting out of the military and pursuing my education at Marshall, we were fortunate to finally purchase our first house here in Huntington. And when we did that, we found that our neighbor was an elderly couple. Mm-hmm. And this elderly couple was fairly prestigious in the county. Years gone by. In fact, the gentleman that lived there had been involved in politics, was a former Cabell County commissioner. Mm. She was involved in a lot of the clubs, women's clubs
right.
in the area, and she knew a lot of prominent people. She could tell us about how she met President so-and-so, and Vice President so-and-so, and that she was good friends with Congressman Ken Heckler. So, and so we had a lot of good conversations about the people that she knew and the activities that they were involved in. So as time went on, then since they were both fairly elderly, they were in their 80s and 90s, and then he subsequently died, and she was left all alone. So as a neighbor, well, I'll just check on her and see how things are going, just walk across the lawn and say, how's it going? And subsequently, she asked me, so, well, can you mow my lawn every now and then? So, and so that's how the relationship began.
Right.
And seemed to have an affinity of spirit with her, not knowing that she had some issues going on, but anyway, we had a good relationship.
Yeah. Don't you find that that's the case a lot of times? You know, we'll see a spouse that'll pass away, whether it's the husband or the wife, and sometimes those individuals become, they were so socially involved in their community or involved in their church or involved in whatever they're in, and then when they experience that death, it's almost like there's a withdrawal, and sometimes they lose connections in that community that they weren't also frequently part of in the past, and that's got to be a big void in their life.
Well, it was. She was not having as many friends over. Of course, a lot of her friends were dying. And she was still fairly physically self-sufficient. She drove up into her mid-90s. She was still driving the car. But, and then she got to the point that she couldn't go to church. She couldn't do her own shopping. And so then she began to ask for a little bit more help on our part. But as it would happen, then we managed to find another house, and we sold that when it moved away. But I always felt that bond between her, so what I would do is I'd call her periodically and see how things were going. And while doing that, I found out that she really enjoyed just having a conversation.
Right.
And to the point that I later on learned that I was the only one that ever called her.
Oh, man.
So,
and you think about that out of being a highly involved person in community, her husband and herself, and being involved in civic groups and, like you said, social clubs and things like that. I guess in some instances you just outlive. At that point, she probably outlived a lot of her friends that she was involved with. So therefore, she had this big void in her life. She was any type of company that she had to be cherished.
Sure, and even with her church, she outlived those friends, and with pastoral changes as they occurred, then they didn't know that she was on the membership roll, and that's all they knew.
Right, and I'd say this has got to be a common theme in all of our communities across the United States today. I mean, it has to be. I mean, where people are outliving their friends, they're outliving the church roster. You know, they were, a member at the church, but yet, like you said, I mean, you know, a lot of those members at the church now don't even know who she really was, other than her name being on the roll, maybe.
Right.
And that's sad, but you know, for you to reach out to her, you know, had to be very good for her.
Well, to the point that it became that I needed to call her daily.
Oh, wow.
And then I became concerned about her because she was in her upper 90s at this point in time. Knowing that she was unable to go get groceries and items that she needed, she was unable to do her own banking business. Now, she had the mental faculty. She knew her business, but she just physically unable to do it. So I would step in and get store lists and go purchase things for her. And, of course, when you deal with the elderly, you better be precise about what you're doing.
Exactly.
And so if I didn't get something on the list that was correct, I'd go back. Go back and exchange it.
And she wasn't paying mileage, was she?
No. No, but people said, well, why are you doing this? And I laughingly would say, well, this is my senior citizens ministry.
There you go.
And of course, my ministry of one.
Right.
But I began to feel an obligation. And then, of course, I began to feel a greater emotional attachment to her. And we kept that up. And so ended up taking her to the doctor, taking her dog to the doctor.
Oh, wow.
And a dog was a big issue to her. And that was one of the funny stories about her. She loved Pekingese.
Oh, wow.
But it had to be solid black Pekingese.
Oh.
Well, she lost her dog, and the dog died, and so she sent me on this journey to find a solid black Pekingese.
Wow. You definitely had your hands full with the life of this lady, didn't you? I mean, on many levels.
Many levels.
You know, it went to the pet side. Hey, Larry, I want to take just a quick break, if I could. And when we come back from the break, let's pick up where we left off talking about the dog and your journey on hunting the dog down for this lady. Because, you know, I want people to get what we're talking about here today. You know, we're talking about reaching out to our neighbors. We're talking about recognizing when someone maybe next door to us or someone that we go to church with or someone that we've been socially involved with in the past is lonely and experiencing some things and get to a point to where their mind is strong but their body isn't able to do the things they used to do, and they really rely on those of us that are around them that have a heart for care and have a heart for ministry. So I want to come back with Larry here in just a few minutes and talk more about that. You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow on Super Talk Radio 94.1 FM and AM 930. Super Talk, and we've got Larry Crawford in the studio with us today and talking about a lot of information here with regard to neighbor-to-neighbor elder care. And when we left, Larry, we were heading into a part that I think we've got to talk about. It's on the hunt for a dog for this lady. And, you know, we got to think back to what we were talking about. We're dealing with someone here that the body physically isn't able to do the things of this person. They're not able to do the things that they once did. The mind is strong. You know, they still want to do things. And I think that sometimes we that are maybe a little younger, a little healthier, sometimes we take that for granted and we don't understand sometimes our neighbors. Maybe they can get a little cranky and, you know, our family members even, you know, get a little cranky and stuff like that. But, you know, you think about that. They've lost a lot of freedoms. You know, when the body can't walk or the body can't drive, you can't drive anymore. I mean, you think about those things that you've done for 40, 50, 60 years, and all of a sudden those things are being taken away from you. You really need someone that can kind of help you out here, and that's kind of what you did here. But let's talk a little bit about your neighbor and the hunt for the dog.
Well, the hunt wasn't very successful locally, and she kept putting the pressure on that. She wanted another dog, She needed it for friendship. So out of not knowing what else to do, I finally went to Nick's News, and I'm sure you remember
them. Oh, yeah,
them,
I do.
And picked up some of the big city newspapers there and bought several of them, went through the ads, and as luck would have it, I finally found a breeder down in Miami, Florida. Called them, went through several phone calls, and with the specific instruction, it had to be solid black. Uh-huh. And so we waited for this litter of puppies to be born, and found out that there was, according to the breeder, a solid black puppy. We waited the period of time so that they could make arrangements, and we finally flew the dog to Huntington.
Wow.
And, of course, they had to go through all of the expenses of that with the vet and all that
sure.
stuff. So I went to pick the dog up, and I was kind of shocked. It had a little white patch on its chest.
Ooh, surprise.
And I thought, oh, no, here we go. And she was disappointed that it had white, but once she saw the dog, there's no way he was going back.
Yeah.
And so we were successful in that, and so I became a hero again.
I would say you did. You know, that's what you find yourself doing things, and, you know, that's a neat little story. But, you know, many that are listening today, there's got to be some sitting there going, hey, I've been in the same situation. I'm helping someone right now, and you know, we think sometimes that because we're doing this, it really is more of a ministry, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
You know, when you really look at it from that standpoint, because why else would a person take on someone that's not a non-family member? Someone that basically you're giving up a good portion of your time to care for someone else. I presume this lady had children or didn't have children?
Well, she had children, but they were far away.
Okay.
So they didn't come in very often. And evidently they didn't talk too much on the phone,
mm-hmm.
but I guess she found a substitute, and so we talked a lot.
She used it. Well, tell us a little bit more about that journey. We talked about the dog, and, you know, of course, naturally there's going to be some things that pop up. We talked a little bit about the five wishes document, the living will, the medical power of attorney. There's a lot of things that when people get to a certain place in their life, they've got to have things in order. That's why we talk about the will. That's why we've had our estate planning attorneys on the show talking about the importance of having a will and updating our will, the importance of having a living will, a medical power of attorney, all those other type of documents. But you actually was involved in some of that with helping her get prepared with some of that end-of-life issues and things like that too, right?
Right. And one of my concerns was that in dealing with her banking business, that people would think, I'm in that situation, you know, I could really gain and profit from all this.
Right.
And people even ask that, what are you getting out of this with your relationships? I'm getting nothing.
Right.
And I made sure that I took nothing.
Right.
And even if you wanted to give a gift, I didn't want to accept it.
Right.
But as time progressed on, then I became somewhat of a financial advisor to her. She had a pocket of money that was in a savings account drawing, 1-2% interest. At that time, that was nothing.
Yeah.
And so we arranged for her to invest that with some financial investors in town. Then as more progression went on, then she began to talk about her will, mm-hmm. and she wanted to redo her will. And so we made sure that she took care of her children.
Right.
And that I was not involved in that. I did not want to be involved in her will. I made sure that even though she wanted to do something, I said, please don't.
Right.
Because I don't want anybody to ever question my motives.
Right.
So when she decided to do that, then eventually it progressed on till we needed some additional paperwork because she was getting elderly and her health was failing. And so someone counseled with, say, she needs a medical power of attorney, she needs some additional paperwork. And so she chose to go ahead and do that paperwork, but she chose to make me the responsible person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, it's a little uncomfortable, but because I was not in conversation with her children to let them know what was going on.
Right.
But the issue came, the calls, daily calls. Every now and then I forget.
Yeah, because now you have moved away. You're not living next door anymore.
Right. And, of course, I'd hear about it when I'd call the next day. She'd say, what happened to you? How come you didn't call? But then there would be times that I would call and she wouldn't answer. That was
troubling.
Then, of course, I began to think, okay, what's going on because of her age? And so I would make a 25-mile trip to her house to go down and check on her. Yeah, false alarm. Everything was okay. Yeah. She accidentally left the phone off the hook or some.
Maybe she was messing with you a little bit. She was just wanting to see if you would actually get in the car and drive 25 minutes.
I
can't discount that.
I thought that one time. But there was a lot of false alarms.
Right.
And so there came one time that I called and didn't hear from her, and I thought, well, I'm not going to go down. This is going to be a false alarm. I called the next day, and something else happened. But the problem with the phone system, I think, well, it's the phone system again. Next time I go to Huntington, I'll check it out.
Right.
And but on the way to Huntington, I received a call from another neighbor. Said, you might want to check on it. There's two newspapers laying on her porch. And sadly enough, she had fallen and broken her hip. And we had to break into the house in order to take care of her medical needs. And at that point in time, I thought she was gone.
Right.
But she had laid there for 2 days, and boy, I felt pretty bad about it.
And you put yourself in the situation. Those who are listening, you put yourself in the situation that Larry was in. And I'm thinking this from my own perspective here. It's got to be mentally taxing, to a certain extent. I mean, because here you are caring for someone that's a non-family member, but you do care for them, and then when you have these phone calls back and forth and this driving distance back and forth, and then when you can't get a hold of them, you automatically have this fear inside that something horrible has happened, which in this case something had, and that's the situation you run into when there isn't family members that's involved. And sometimes, and what would have happened in that situation had you not been involved in her life? How long would she have been in that floor, with that broken hip and things like that?
Right. She had a problem once before when she went to visit one of her children, mm-hmm. and she was involved in an automobile accident and was hospitalized for a while. But she was to the point that she kept pushing the issue, I want to go back home. And so they finally brought her back home and gave her some round-the-clock nursing.
Yeah.
And she didn't like that. So there's three nurses that were with her.
Strangers,
yeah. And she fired this one, then she fired that one, then she said, you can leave, I don't need you.
Oh, wow.
And here she is in her late 90s.
Wow.
Getting rid of all of her help. But that was
still making executive decisions at 90.
Very good. And so that's what it was. But after she broke her hip this time, she ended up in a nursing home for a while and progressed eventually to a assisted living.
Yeah. Now, were you involved with, you was talking about her moving to a nursing home and being involved with medical power of attorney and things like that. Were you involved in helping her make that transition to the nursing home?
Very much so.
Yeah.
In fact, I took care of everything. I had to do all the paperwork, pay all the bills, and make all the arrangements. Now, the children, again, would pop in and out, and we're involved in it also.
Sure.
But they begin to put a bit more trust in me.
Right.
But I always felt that they were kind of looking at me sideways.
Well, but that, you know, that's one of those things too, that when we've heard a lot of when placing someone in a nursing home, it's one of those things you go through mentally. You want to make sure that you're putting them in the right facility that's best. That's the best fit for them also.
Right.
You know, they're going to be, because they're really not going to be comfortable for the most part. None of us would be comfortable going into a place that's not our home. You know, so that had to be taxing for you also, trying to make sure that you were finding the right place for her, that you were making the best, even though this is, again, not a family member, but you're trying to look out for her best interest, you know, all the way through this whole process.
And one of the tendencies that I had was after that she was in a nursing home, I can think, well, she's got people there, they're taking care of her,
I can relax. Yeah.
But that was not the case.
Yeah.
Daily visits were required. And so it became even more taxing on me, even though that sometimes she'd be completely out of it. I'd be in there, and she'd never know I was there.
Right.
But she did progress and got better.
Good.
And, again, up to the point of assisted living.
Right.
And she still had the desire that she wanted to go home.
That was her goal, to get herself, right, you know, recuperated to where she could move back.
But that never occurred.
Yeah.
She attained her 100th birthday.
Oh, wow.
She was in assisted living. Of course, they had a big party for her. But finally, she fell again and broke a hip. Mm-hmm. And as it is the case with a lot of elderly, when they break a hip, this was the,
it's kind
the
of
final
a,
thing.
Yeah, so. It's kind of a thing that really is devastating for them, their health, the final straw, really, I guess you'd say.
But one of the things in preparation, we talked about dealing with her finances. There was an issue that I wanted to deal with while she was still in a good mind.
Right, right. Well, Larry, can you stay with us the last half of the show?
Sure.
We'd love to talk to you more about this, and we want to talk about some other things that you've got going on in your life. I understand you've got a lot going on in your life, and I hear that from your wife, so I think that's a good thing.
Staying busy.
Yeah, we'll be right back with more Planning for Tomorrow. You're listening to Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930. And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow. I'm Fred Kitchen along with you today. And, you know, we're talking to, we've got Larry Crawford in the studio. We're talking about neighbor-to-neighbor elder care. And, again, I want to make everyone aware of the website at pftradio.com. A lot of good resources on there. So I want to make sure that you are checking that out. All of our podcasts are also on there. And then at Henson Mortuary, the Planning for Tomorrow radio show is a media resource of Henson Mortuary. And want to make sure that you know that those documents that we were talking about, the living will, the medical power of attorney, is available, things like that. So, Larry, when we left, we were wrapping some things up there. We were talking a little bit about the lady that you had been helping. She was in a nursing home. She had fell. She had got a little better, and then she fell again. And when she fell again, I guess that was kind of helped with her demise, I guess
you'd
say.
That was the beginning of the end, yes.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, knowing that I was the executor of her estate, and of course her children were aware of this at this point, I knew exactly what was involved in that, so I tried to simplify matters a little bit. Mm-hmm. With her financial investments that had been made, I went down there and did the paperwork to indicate that upon her death, all of the money transferred to her children at that point in time, and that money did not go into the estate.
Right.
And also with the talking with one of the children, I went ahead and made the funeral arrangements, and so that I could write all the checks, pay all the expenses beforehand.
That's one of the things that a lot of people, some are aware of. There's a lot that aren't aware of the benefits of going ahead and doing that. You did have the ability to write those checks. It saved a lot of trouble by pre-planning, basically what you did, her funeral arrangements, because it's one less thing that the family had to deal with at the time of need. It's one less thing that you had to deal with, and then you were sure that it was all taken care of in advance, and you was probably able to kind of run some of those things by family members and stuff like that to make sure that it met everyone's criteria, you know, for what they expected, you know, also.
Right. The one thing that the children weren't aware of was what I did with the financial aspects of it and how it would all be transferred to them.
Yeah, I bet that was...
They found out after her death, and of course I became their best friend.
That's always the case when... when they find out that the caregiver didn't take all the money and they got it.
Well, I wanted to make sure I didn't take any of it.
Right, exactly. Well, and that brings on the whole thing that we talked about from the beginning of the show of the whole reason behind doing this and the whole heart behind why we do the things that we do sometimes. What are our motives? We all know that there's people out there, individuals, that their motives are way different than yours or mine or even others that are listening today. And if you're doing something like this from the heart of ministry, you really care for someone, you really care for human beings, then it takes on a whole different feel. It's not just a business transaction for you. It's not just something that you're going to make a few extra dollars. You know, it's actually something that you feel like what I would consider that you were actually building kingdom. You were making kingdom deposits, I guess you'd say, you know, not necessarily financial or earthly deposits here.
Right, right.
So that's really pretty cool story right there, you know, talking about that. So I guess the kids were probably pretty excited with you and wanted to bring you into the family at that point, didn't they, for sure?
Yes. In fact, we've gotten together several times since then.
Yeah, so. Yeah. See, yeah. You can love the one who didn't take sometimes. But that's awesome. That's awesome. So anything else you want to share about that?
Well, not in reference to that, but I think one of the things that I learned while I was going through this process, if I had it to do it over again with another person, I would do all that I could within my powers to open the lines of communication with other family members.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the things that I was doing, I was operating in the dark, knowing that they didn't know what I was doing, but had I made contact with them, and that would have dispelled some of the issues that I felt like were there.
Did you feel like when you were involved with all this, and that's one of the things that I think that I've heard individuals say before that are in a situation like you, is they get a feeling sometimes, and sometimes it's hard, you know, walking up to someone, if you're a shy person, walking up to someone and just saying, "Hi, my name's Fred Kitchen, and I'm glad to meet you." And that's difficult for a lot of people, you know, and to open up that line of communication for family members that you might feel aren't very receptive to begin with what you're doing, or, you know, and trying to help them, dealing with family members that might not necessarily be you. I guess the advice I'm asking is, if you feel like that if family members aren't receptive, that's something you should probably still at least make the attempt to do, to open a line of communication saying, "Hey, I am here. I do have your mom's best interest at heart. What would you guys want?"
Very much so. I would recommend doing that.
Yeah.
And it would dispel some of the images that I have, or the perceptions that I had of the children.
Right.
That would have dispelled some of that.
Yeah.
You know, she had some feelings that she indicated about one of her children,
mm-hmm.
and which led me to believe some things.
Right.
But which was not
there's,
the case.
There's always two sides to every story, as we say a lot.
Right.
Larry, if there was some things that you could share with listeners today in your journey here, this neighbor-to-neighbor elder care, some things that you would say, here is 3, 4, 5 things that I would recommend you do, I'd recommend you not do. Of course, you give us one there. What would be some other things that you would recommend?
What I would recommend is first of all, get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Get involved with that neighbor. Don't assume that somebody else is doing it.
Right.
And you know, we met with a lady just this past week who was in one of the subdivisions here of Huntington. And she was in that same situation that her husband had died, and she was all alone. She was real elderly. And we asked her, a point blank asked her, "What's going on with you? Mm-hmm. Who's looking after you? Are the neighbors taking care of
right.
you?" And fortunately, they were, and we were glad. But if they weren't, then we were going to probably intercede and,
right.
and try to get something done. And because of our past experience.
Sure.
So that was a good thing. So get involved. Don't assume that somebody else is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And feel free to talk situations. Talk with them. What are your needs?
Yeah.
And do you have issues financially?
Right.
And are there things that we can help you with? Do we need to talk to your children or other family members?
Those are questions a lot of times that some of us may feel like, you know what, I really hate to ask those questions because they may feel a little probing, you know, in areas that they may not want to talk about. But in the reality of things, these people on the other side are needing this help. And that's the only way you're going to get to the root of what's going on and the type of help they need to make you got to diagnose and then write a prescription, you know, and you can't do that without the right information.
Yeah, and sometimes I think when one spouse dies and the other one's left alone, and they don't really want to let you know that I'm not as self-sufficient as I was.
Right.
And so do probe and ask questions and to let them know that you really care, not that you're out for some other gain of some type.
Right, right. Very good.
And go the next step. If there is something that needs to be done, don't try to shovel it off if you can't.
Right.
You know, go ahead and take the reins and go for it. But make sure that your motives are pure, and make sure that you avoid all appearances of any wrongdoing or any evil or anything else. Because
right.
That's what the newspaper headlines are made of.
Exactly, exactly. Larry, I want to take just a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what in the world is going on with Larry Crawford right now. You know, we've talked about your journey from the past, and I want to talk about what you're doing right now, and I think it's some exciting things for you, exciting things for our community and the tri-state. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow on 94.1 FM and AM 930. And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow. Fred Kitchen along with you, and in the studio with us today, we have had Larry Crawford, and we've been talking about neighbor-to-neighbor elder care. What an incredible journey that you've been on, Larry. And I really appreciate you bringing that to light for us, because like I said, we've spent a lot of time on shows talking about the professional aspects of elder care and people, the professionals that jump involved, and you are a professional now that you've had that experience. But I want to move on and talk a little bit about what in the world is going on with Larry Crawford right now. And I've seen some things as I drive through town. I see some your pictures up. Tell us a little bit about what in the world you've gotten yourself into.
Well, Fred, first of all, I've been very blessed throughout my whole career and my life.
Right.
I have a great family, and God has taken care of me in every situation that I've been in.
Absolutely.
And just to give you a little bit before I get into that, while I was in the military, mm-hmm. It seems as though there are a lot of things that were triggered in the military that took me in a different direction I thought I was going to go. But what it would do, it was always take me to something better.
Uh-huh.
Even when I thought it was a tragic event, it turned out for my good.
Isn't it amazing how life can do that to you? Well, it's not life, it's God thing.
That's a God thing. And so after the 5 years of active duty military, I came back home to get my degree from Marshall. And during that time, I was working at Prestera Center.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as I've jokingly said many times, I crammed 4 years of college into 5.5 years. And, of course, it was during the time that I was at Prestera. And Prestera was good to me,
right?
Because they allowed me to take morning classes, and of course, I could take evening classes. But after graduating from there, I left Prestera and was very blessed to get in as a probation officer for the Circuit Court of Cabell County.
Oh, okay.
And that was a job that I was not looking for. And that was a job that I didn't want, but yet a judge called and said, I want to talk to you.
Yeah, how long did you do that?
I did it for Cabell County for 8 years.
Wow.
And, of course, after I got in through the circuit court in probation work, I found out if you really want to be a good probation officer and make some good money, get into the federal system.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was one caveat. You had to get in before you turned 35.
Oh, wow.
Well, I tried and I tried and I tried, and then my 35th birthday came, and then, so that was a dream that was gone.
Yeah.
But strangely enough, when I was 38 years old, they called me and said, we want to offer you a job in federal probation. I said, well, you know, I'm too old. Well, they said, no, we've dropped that requirement, that age restriction. We've taken that off, and we want to offer you a job. I said, thank you, God.
Yeah.
I'm gone. And
I'll
took
take
the
it.
Job. But, you know, the unique thing was after I got in there, the administrative office in Washington realized, you know, this is federal law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
We erred. We should have not dropped that age restriction, and they put it back on.
Oh, my goodness.
So who jumped in during that window
period? Yeah, that was God.
It was God thing.
Yeah.
So, that was something that led up to that, because I had a decision to make prior to that,
mm-hmm.
and it was a difficult decision, and the pastor at that time told me, you make the right decision, God will take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
He proved that, so
yeah.
He did take care of me. So I finished my years with the federal probation and retired. And so finally, I reached that retirement, I can enjoy it. And so I enjoyed it for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And then I received a call from Pastor Kevin West,
mm-hmm.
and Pastor Chuck Lawrence out at Christ Temple, right. asking me if I would be the headmaster of the private Christian school that they had.
Right.
And I thought, well, I can supervise people. I don't know much about education.
I know all about probation, and that goes right hand in hand with school, doesn't it? But it did my years. So. But anyway, go ahead.
But anyway, so I spent 3 years there as the headmaster and enjoyed every minute of it. Enjoy the kids, and didn't have to worry about locking them up, putting them in jail. So.
Right, that's a good thing.
But and so then we joined in with Covenant. Covenant moved into our campus facility, and our student body joined theirs. Covenant maintained their identity.
Right.
And so I worked myself out of a job.
Okay.
So I was back to being retired again. But then I realized and got to thinking about it, well, I've got so many years in with the state of West Virginia. Why can't I work some more for them and then get another retirement.
Right.
And so that God worked that out for
right.
me. And I was able to get involved with the Western Regional Day Report Center and work for them. And then I retired last year in 2011. But during that time, the court officials there and some people on staff, they said, you know, you ought to think about running for a magistrate.
Uh-huh.
And I laughed. But the more that that seed got watered, then more it began to grow. Then mm-hmm. I thought, well, why not?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I felt like I had a lot to offer, and so I jumped in feet first, and here we go.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's got to be it's got to be one of those things where, like you said, you look at the steps of it's easy to look back and go, oh, that was a God thing. That was a God thing. At the time, we're going, like you said, when you work yourself out of a job, when doors close on you, things like that, you go, God, what is going on? I've been exactly where you're at. But then you look back a year later, 2 years later, and go, oh, I get it. I figured it out now. So now that you've got this figured out and you're running for magistrate in Cabell County here in Huntington, let's talk a little bit about that. You got a few minutes here, and we can talk a little bit about what do you want to do? What do you see? What do you envision that you can bring to Cabell County? I mean, I know you're a godly man. I know that you've got an impeccable work history, and you've got a lot of good relationships and things like that, which is what you need in order to be able to take and do things the right way. Let's talk a little bit about what you see as you envision for future.
During the period of time that I was working this last segment, I was really in contact with the magistrate court fairly well and on a daily basis. And there was a lot of things that went on there. And, of course, they're overwhelmed with their job duties that they have. But I began to see that there are some things that possibly could be improved upon because mm-hmm. having worked in the federal system, which operates like a well-oiled machine, and they have steps and standards and policies and procedures, and I began to see that some of those probably could be incorporated in the magistrate court system itself. And so I felt like I had something maybe I could offer.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't have any fears of having any skeletons in my closet should
right.
I run for office, because being a politician,
that's got to be a great feeling.
Well, being a politician was something that was kind
yeah.
of not looking forward to.
Oh, yeah.
But yet I've had a great time campaigning.
I yeah.
still call it being a
networking, really. I
politicking.
Mean, yeah.
I was campaigning, but meeting people in this community, I found there's some great people out there. And the more people I meet, the more I want to meet.
Right.
And it's opened my eyes to a lot of aspects of this community that in my small realm I didn't see.
Yeah.
Because spending 30 years dealing with criminals, you begin to think, well, maybe there's not too many people left that
right.
are good.
Right.
But there are a lot of good people, and it's a great place to live, and love Cabell County. And, of course, I plan on being here for the duration.
Exactly.
But I'm looking forward to trying out and seeing how it is to work in the magistrate system.
Yeah, I think you've got a great opportunity there. I think with you bringing you bring something that, and you're honest about it. You're not trying to conceal anything. You're saying, hey, I'm a Christian.
Sure.
And you know, sometimes you don't always hear that mixed with politics, you know, because there's that separation a lot of times. But, you know, you've got your character that it's not worth running a character over. I mean, you spent your whole life building that, so you definitely want to make sure that stays intact. And by being honest about it and saying, hey, this is who I am, this is my history, this is what I want to do, this is what I envision. And beyond that, look at the experience that I've got on a federal level, that we can probably bring those ideas and things that was done on a federal level to bring some more consistency. I guess, is that what you're kind of seeing that needs to be brought into the magistrate area?
Yes. And one of the things that I learned while in the federal system that I've incorporated throughout my life is that when you're dealing with people, you know, you're going to find people who do bad things.
Mm-hmm.
They're good people.
Right.
And so you deal with the person and you treat them with respect, mm-hmm. but you still deal with the bad behavior.
Sure.
And no matter what you do, you're still a person and you need to be respected. And I'm not going to be condescending. I know there are bad people out there
sure.
who do bad things and they need to be locked up. But there are a lot of people out there who get involved in drugs who wish they had never, but they don't know how to get out of it.
Right.
Okay, you still treat them with respect, and let's find ways to deal
with it. To get them out of it.
To get them out of it. And of course, I'll be straight up with you. The best way out of it is you got to turn your life around and
Absolutely.
Get it focused on the main thing, and the main thing is God.
Absolutely. And I think you bring that into your magistrate court, you're going to see a lot of change. I think, there's no doubt in my mind you would see change if that's part of your philosophy.
And I expect, what I look forward to doing is giving people choices.
Mm-hmm.
If you want something from me, then I'm gonna give you some choices. And if you make the right choice and you follow through with what you say, well and good. If you don't follow through, then I have choices.
Right.
And the choices to make and to deal with the behavior. Still want to treat you with respect, but
right.
Deal with the behavior.
Right. That's one of the things that I think that as human element, I think that's just what any of us are looking for. No matter what we get ourselves into, no matter what direction we want, we still want to be treated as a human being.
Right.
It's when I've got two little girls, and when you're correcting children, I mean, you correct what, at 6 and 10 years old, their intent is not to be criminal.
Sure.
So you don't treat them like a criminal, but you treat the behavior, the bad behavior, and you say, okay, let's learn from this, and let's make sure that there's a way that you can kind of learn from it and get yourself on the right path. But, just telling someone, hey, you need to get yourself on the right path, a lot of people need that step 1, 2, 3, give me some help, give me some tools to be able to get myself back on track. And I think, do you feel like that's one of the things that you would like to bring as tools for these people as far as not just correction, but, here's some things that we're going to offer you to help you get back on track?
Sure. There are a lot of community resources, and Huntington is really putting forth a concerted effort to deal with drug abuse. It's not only coming from the correction side of it, it's coming from your police department, it's coming from other agencies. And so there are numerous choices for people to get involved.
Right.
Again, the biggest issue is substance abuse.
Election Day coming up, and naturally you want people to come out and put Larry Crawford in as magistrate in Cabell County.
Right, especially you'll have to look over on the Republican ticket. So
that's all right.
I am a conservative, and that's where I am, number 4 on the ballot.
There you go. Larry, we sure appreciate having you in the studio with us today, and you brought a lot of insight, and I look forward to seeing what you do for Cabell County in the future. And I think you've got a lot of great things to bring to us all. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Fred. It's a great privilege to be here.
You've been listening to Planning for Tomorrow, and we certainly appreciate you being with us today, all of our listeners. Again, check out our website at pftradio.com. A lot of good information right there. And also want to make you aware that we have the Resource Center at Henson Mortuary available to you. So be sure and check that out. And you're listening to Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Your home of the Cincinnati Bengals and the National Football League. Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930. WRVC Huntington.